G'day everyone, and welcome to the Female Voices in E-Commerce podcast. My name is Chana, and I'm the founder of Owl & Monk, an e-commerce consultancy in Southern Sydney. I work one-on-one with business owners on their e-commerce strategy, website design, and development. Using the right online tools and systems, we make the lives of business owners easier and create personalized e-commerce solutions that help them to sell their products effectively online. I'm also the co-founder of the Shopify Women's Network, an online community designed to empower women to confidently use Shopify to grow their brands. This is a podcast for women looking to take their idea to the world and want the knowledge, inspiration, and connection to build a business that they love. Listen to our podcast series to hear the voices of female founders, entrepreneurs, and advocates who share their stories, experiences, and strategies on how to run a successful retail business. I hope you enjoy the show. Big red button on.
Yeah.
You ready to rock and roll?
I'm ready.
G'day, Anita, and welcome to the Female Voices in E-Commerce podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for joining me today. Anita and her husband, Vic, are the founders of Hero Packaging, and in just 4 years have started a very successful business selling compostable packaging called Hero Packs and are a carbon positive company. They run their business here in Sydney with their three young daughters. So welcome, Anita. Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started with the business?
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, I am Anita. I own Hero Packaging. It is my second e-commerce business. The first one was a B2C business. And I started Hero Packaging basically because all of the packages that I was sending out in my previous business were all in plastic. Even inside it was all bubble wrap. Everything that I was sending out other than the product itself was in plastic. And so at that point, even though I really wasn't someone who was really focused on sustainability at that time, I looked at it and I knew something wasn't right. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to try and fix this problem for my own business. And if I can do that, then I can hopefully solve it for other businesses too. And when we kind of tested demand for other businesses, they were all really excited and we knew that there was something there. And that's kind of how Hero Packaging began.
Congratulations. And I think a lot of innovation comes from people's own experiences. Now, you've got three young daughters, and I know there was this moment with your first business where you were right, this is not on. Can you tell us a little bit more about the packaging and your daughters at the time?
Yeah, sure. So my kids, I had two girls at the time, and it was in the school holidays, I believe, and they were just sort of sitting there in the office where we were monogramming and we were shipping packages off. We were waiting for the postie, and they were just playing with all the packaging that was left over. So that was like a lot of bubble wrap, a lot of the strips of the plastic, a lot of the bags. They would like put it on their shoulders, pretend they were capes. They were just playing with plastic all over the office. It was kind of mortifying to see it. And to think now that in our office space now there's no plastic, and to think just 4 years ago, 3 years ago, it was so different. I feel really upset at myself, and you know, to see that my kids went through that they actually had so much plastic around them thinking it's normal. And now we're trying to make that change, not only in business, but also in our personal life, to make sure that we're really minimizing as much as we can.
Yeah, that's really an interesting point. I think, you know, kids only learn from the behaviors that they see. And if it becomes normal, they think it is normal. So at least now their new normal is they're watching their parents as entrepreneurs and trying to make a difference. So
yeah.
Eliminating the plastic from their lives, I think, is a really good stepping stone. And it's just really exciting to see that you're kind of shaping the future for them through that process.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's a good thing for us too. I think there's two things here. One is, yes, the plastic minimalization, but then also teaching them the skills of business at the same time, which is really exciting.
So tell me, why is plastic a problem?
Because it is everywhere. It's kind of like sugar. It's, you cannot avoid it. Wherever you go, it is everywhere. It's in your packaging, it's in your body, it's in the ocean, it's in landfill, and it's sticking around. And so this is the major problem with plastic. It's the production of the plastic, which causes a lot of fossil fuels, which we all know. And then it's the actual end of life of plastic, which lasts for hundreds of years, but also breaks down into all these tiny, tiny microplastics, which if you really look at it closely, it's in all the food that we're eating, it's in the fish, it's in the ocean, it's everywhere, and it's building up in random parts of the world, like in tiny little islands. There's mountains of plastic there that no one knew about. And so, for me, it's like a huge, huge problem that we need to tackle.
And from a retail perspective, how can we visualise just how much waste of plastic is going out each year at the moment?
I think it's something along the lines of 9.1 million tonnes per year of packaging. And also all waste that you see in the world, 40% of that is packaging waste. Mm. So that's a massive amount.
So for people that can't quite understand that scale, how can we visualise that amount of waste?
So I think it's about, like, there was a 9 tennis court size, championship tennis court size, or a football stadium, I believe I read, of waste that we produce every year. I mean, that's a stadium full of waste 9 times over, which is just incredibly, incredibly scary to think about.
Yeah, it's terrifying, actually.
Yeah.
So tell me, how can, like, smaller businesses and entrepreneurs or startups actually get started with a bit more of a sustainable objective?
I think it comes from what you can do easiest first. So what we sell is packaging. What we've tried to do is make it as easy as possible to switch from plastic packaging to sustainable packaging. So specifically, we sell compostable packaging, and there really are two main options when it comes to sustainable packaging. There is recycled plastic that can be recycled in a soft plastics bin, or compostable packaging, which is what we do. And so I think a lot of retailers were trying really hard to make that side of things really easy. So it's very easy to switch it up from your plastic bags to compostable bags. Another thing you can do is just within your space itself, just making sure you're not using things like water bottles, coffee cups. You're doing everything in a reusable way. Making sure that rather than having fake plants, have real plants. It actually not only is great for the environment, but actually boosts productivity too. And it's just the little things of, if you have food waste, don't put it in the bin, put it in a compost bin. You know, a lot of people say to us, but I don't have a compost bin, what do I do? And my answer is always, well, why don't you try and have one? Why don't you start with having something small and putting your food waste in there and then just chucking it into a FOGO bin, or you can put it into your fertilizer, you can put it into your plants that you have in your kitchen. There's so many options that you can do. Another thing that I would always say is, you don't have a compost bin, there are community gardens that you can send your food waste to. You can contact companies like Share Waste. There's so many things out there that you can do, but it doesn't mean you need to do everything. You can do one thing at a time, and you can do it slowly, but any little thing is going to make a difference.
I think that's really good advice, both from the everyday user as well as the retailer. So it's a matter of us just opening up our eyes. Like, there's so many different options available for us to actually dispose of that waste in a more mindful way. I think I read on one of your Instagram posts around, you know, use the bag to kind of pick up your dog poo. You know, put it in your Green Council waste. Like, there's things all around you that you could be actually reusing that bag. Are you seeing any trends with retailers actually looking at, like, reusing their packaging when they're sending it out to the consumer?
There is a bit of a trend in that way, but it actually slowed down because of COVID. A lot of people were really scared that, okay, if I touch it and then someone else reuses it and then it gets reused, it's going to be infected. So a lot that trend has actually decreased. To have reusable bags is fantastic if you can use it in for a different purpose. So for example, if you get a shipping bag and you can turn it into a shopping bag, then you can turn it into a bin liner, then you might, you know, throw that out into your compost bin. So you can maybe use it in multiple ways, but there are some retailers, what they're trying to do is have a shipping bag, which then you return to the retailer and that retailer uses it again and then they ship it back. That trend is decreasing just because people are really scared of the whole, I'm going to touch it, then you're going to touch it and I'm going to get infected.
One interesting thing I learned lately was just in regards to returns. Like, as business owners and retailers, we're trying to make the best customer experience. We're offering, free returns. Do you think it's something to do with the policy? And if we made it harder for people to return, that they would make more mindful decisions, limit the amount of returns, therefore limit the amount of waste?
That's interesting. I think that returns is a really big part of emulating the in-store retail experience, because we can't try things on, we can't test things. And I think having returns is a really big part of online retail. And yes, it's pretty bad for the environment to do that, but I think we need to solve that problem in a sustainable way, but also realize that minimizing returns maybe isn't a thing, because people want to feel that instant gratification of buying something. Okay, it doesn't fit, but I know that I can return and get what I want, or the size that I want. And so we need to keep that there available for consumers, but we need to maybe figure out a better solution for it.
And I think it may be just a combination of, like, do we offer free shipping? I mean, it's free return shipping.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we will take returns, you know, based on, is it in a resaleable condition, you know, is it the wrong size? Let's, you know, look at our policies. But do we actually need to offer free shipping with that?
Mm, yeah, that's interesting.
Because I think the free shipping model, it's very appetizing, but it is encouraging people to buy more and less mindful purchases. So therefore, there's a lot more things moving back when they shouldn't have even been bought in the first place.
Mm, yeah, I agree with that.
And when I work with my clients, I always describe it as, you know, it's okay to charge for shipping, because you've got to replicate the fact that somebody isn't taking the time to get in their car, drive to a shopping centre, pay for parking. It's actually far more convenient to get it delivered door to door. And yes, I can pay for my shipping.
Yeah, you would think so. But consumers sometimes don't see it that way. And it's about educating them and keep on reminding them that why we need to charge for shipping. And it's not just profiteering. It's actually, we need to cover the costs of running our business.
Oh, absolutely. And it's having people in your warehouse to actually take that package back, to quality control it, and then to resell it. Like, that's a lot of steps for an item that may not have much profit margin either.
So. Absolutely.
So I'm curious, there's been some legislation change recently around the use of single-use plastics. I was just curious, what does that mean for retailers and consumers from your perspective?
It means that we have to be very careful now in terms of, you know, if I'm a retailer, what we need to provide to our customers. So the thing that they have banned currently is single-use shopping bags that are made of plastic. So it needs to be a thin bag. So you see those fruit and veg bags that are very thin plastic, they're not allowed anymore. Or shopping bags that are very thin, and they usually just get put in the bin as soon as they get home because they usually rip, they're really bad quality. Those things are not allowed anymore. But what we need to be aware of is that bigger changes are coming. So we need to, as retailers, know, okay, let's have a look at, you know, organizations like APCO and see what they're doing and see, okay, what is the future of packaging? What do I need to be careful of? If I'm going into the hospitality industry as a business owner, what is coming up where I won't be able to provide certain things? Or if I'm going into the packaging industry, which we're in, you know, what is coming up where we might lose certain business products or a whole level of revenue generation? What are we going to do in the future? So in order to know that, you need to follow those sorts of companies like APCO. They actually have a plan, you know, with 2025, what they expect to see in 2030, what they expect to see. And you need to build your business for that future.
So APCO is the Australian Packaging Covenant Organisation. Can you tell us a little bit about them?
Yeah, so they're an organisation that is, if I'm putting it into basic terms, trying to prevent things, and by things I mean packaging, going into landfill. And that is their entire model. They have different ventures, but one of them is the ANZ Pack Plastics Pact, and that is that by 2025 all packaging should either be recyclable, compostable, or reusable. And they're doing such a fantastic job. There are so many retailers on board, so many people on board who are pushing this forward.
Tell us what the difference between carbon neutral and carbon positive is to you at Hero Packaging.
So for me, what the way I think about it is, when you put carbon into the environment, whether that's with you packaging and then shipping off an order or taking a flight or driving somewhere, if you want to be carbon negative, that means it's the same as climate positive, which just means that you're taking out more carbon than you're putting in. That's how I think about it. And carbon neutral means that you're equalized. So as much as you're putting out, you're taking out.
And so you as a business are now in a carbon positive position.
Correct, yes. And we're actually working harder to be official in that capacity. So what we're doing right now is we're buying credits, but then we want to work with organisations to make sure that we're certified in that way.
Just tell us a bit about your Hero Packs, just what they're made of and the process you went about getting those manufactured.
It was a really complex process. So Hero Packs are, what they do is they emulate plastic in the shipping process. So they take your products from place A to place B. When you are shipping any of your products to your customers, they are not plastic though. So they are made of two parts. One is PBAT and one is PLA. PLA is the natural resource, which is really made from cassava, and it's made from cornstarch, and there's a whole bunch of resins that are all naturally derived. And then PBAT is a man-made element where it is completely certified home compostable, but it is the binding agent that puts the maler together. And so with these two things, each element needs to be certified in order to be home compostable, because as we know, industrially compostable is just not good enough anymore. And so we knew when we were creating it, it needed to be able to be put into a home compost bin so that in a few months it's completely turned into fertilizer and you can just dump it into your plants. That was our goal. It was a really big goal because at the time we kind of knew about composting and we kind of didn't know about it, and we just went on this major learning curve. So when we realized that there was a problem with plastic packaging, I came home, I ran home, and I remember thinking I need to do something, and I asked Vic what he thought his idea was, and he said, well, why don't we try boxes? And that didn't work. Boxes are very expensive to ship and they're really not great. And then we tried paper, and that's not waterproof. And so we really wanted something that felt like plastic but wasn't. That was kind of the start of it. And then it took about 3 months of figuring out what we wanted to actually make. Then it took another 6 months of contacting manufacturers, calling them every day, getting samples, getting them tested, not just by ABA, which is the Bioplastics Association in Australia, but also in our home compost bin, because you can't always trust certifications. You need to test things yourself. So we tested it out. And when we found the perfect manufacturer, and now we have a handful of them, we got really excited. And so that's when we placed our bulk order. But I think that took us, I think anywhere between 9 and 12 months of testing and sampling, and even our first bulk order wasn't right. So we sold that and that was great, but then we made revisions and revisions and revisions, and finally got to the product we wanted.
Yeah, quite a journey. And it's producing any product's never quick at all. Yeah. So you made a deliberate decision to manufacture in China.
Yes.
So I'd just like to know a little bit more about that and why you decided to go with a Chinese manufacturer versus a locally run business.
I think that's a great question, because it's not that we intentionally chose it, but what we did was we looked around. So we started in Australia. Australia for us would be the easiest to manufacture. It would be amazing in terms of shipping fees. Also just locally made is so, it's perfect for us, but we couldn't find any manufacturer here that could do what we would do, what we wanted to do. There was not one, and we don't have the resources to set up our own manufacturing facility. So that really was out of the question. That's not to say we're not open to it if it does make it becomes available, but right now it's just not there. And so what we did was we explored multiple manufacturers in multiple countries. The resins themselves are manufactured in China. So actually, for environmental purposes, it is great to have the resins transported from there to our manufacturer of the mailers. And so that's what we did initially. And that, to this day, they are bread and butter products. They're made in China. We have gone there to meet the manufacturers. We've gone to see how they do things. We've gone just to see working conditions. And we loved it. We love who they are. They're great people. But in saying that, we have a lot of other products now which are made all over the world. So we have products made in Australia, in Germany, in the USA, in Malaysia. And we're trying to figure out how we can do things so that, you know, the made in China concept. One, we want to educate people that not everything made in China is bad, because we actually have chosen fantastic manufacturers, but also the fact that we are trying to do as much as we can to manufacture in different places to test that as well.
But I think that's a really good process to go through, because you are actually going to the experts in each different type of manufacturing to get the best outcome.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about the relationship you have with your Chinese manufacturers?
Yeah, so we love them. We've got a handful now. I mean, to be honest with you, we've tested so many there. And like I said before, not everything that you see online or not everything that you hear from them is accurate. So you need to test things yourself. And then when you actually go and you meet that, I would always recommend, if you can and if you have the opportunity to do so, to go and meet the manufacturers that are making your products. It opens your eyes, because when you go and see 4 or 5 factories, when you see people working there, when you actually talk to not just the sales staff who are good at the sales, but actually talk to people who are working there, talk to the management, see how they're running things, it is incredibly eye-opening. And so the relationship that we have has been built over 4 years. And, you know, this manufacturer that we're using right now was the most expensive one that we found. So at the beginning, I thought, no, I cannot use them because they're too expensive. We can't build margin into this product. And now what I've realized is it really, you're paying for what you get, and they are just incredible. We speak to them all the time. You know, we use apps like WeChat, even Skype to chat to them. We have phone calls with them all the time, and they're very much on board with what we're doing. They keep an eye out on all the updates that we make as a company. They're on our Instagram page. You know, we have a really great relationship.
And I think it doesn't matter who you manufacture with. Like, they're an extension of your team. So it's the same as your business partners. Like, they are your business. So for everyone to succeed, you need to work in harmony with each other. And it's that extension of that family culture that you're probably trying to create as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And also a lot of honesty. So if we are sourcing products from elsewhere and we're trying to do different things, we always tell them. We always are really transparent about what we're doing and where we see the growth of the company and what products we're trying to source. And if they can help us, they try and do that for us too.
And it's one of those things that, you know, you may be introduced to somebody, whether or not it's a manufacturer or a partner or somebody else in industry, where, you know, you've been introduced to them as being an expert in something, but they actually have so many other things that they can offer. So the fact that you're inviting them to actually give you the ability to kind of collaborate further, I think, is a really good starting point.
Yeah.
Like attracts like. So if they can't do it, they probably know somebody who can do it for you.
Correct.
So, and, you know, you're all an average of your own kind of network regardless. So the quality and standards probably exactly the same. It's just they're experts in a different type of, you know, production.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd like to talk a little bit just kind of around cash flow and growth for the business. Mm. I know recently that, you know, Hero Packaging went into an equity raise, which is quite an exciting change for you as, you know, two co-founders. So I'd like to know a little bit about that growth strategy and how you made that decision to actually go for an equity raise.
When you are a bootstrapped business, you are putting everything that you can back into the business. But what people don't tell you is that when you take the money and you put it back into a business, you're funding just the next level. You're not actually funding high growth. So if you are a high growth startup where what you need to produce and a lot of the inventory needs to increase to meet demand, you can't bootstrap your way there unless you've got margins of, you know, 800%, which is what a lot of, you know, high-end designer brands have. We don't have that luxury. And what we knew we needed to do was to actually get funding in the business. We needed to think about the ways we were going to do that. So we had been approached by high net worth individuals. We had been approached by VCs, private equity. None of that sat right with us. What we wanted to do was have a group of people who we could trust, who were on board, who had invested money in us. And we thought, who better than our customers to do that? And we wanted to put that forward to our customers. And we were so nervous when we launched because I did not know whether I knew customers love to buy from us, but I didn't know whether customers wanted to invest in us. And that was my biggest thing. And now, luckily, we hit our goal and we have 750 of our customers on board, which is really a team of people for us who we can bounce ideas off. I mean, I think that is the coolest thing ever. It's not one high net worth individual who believes in your business. It is 750 of your customers who want to be part of the journey and who want to see you succeed. And that was the best decision for us.
Yeah, congratulations, because cash flow is one thing. So you want to get more equity in the business, but to have a network of people that believe in you, that want to collaborate and, you know, partner and give you the ideas and support you need, I mean, that's priceless.
It is. And, you know, now we can do things like co-create products with our customers, which we've always done. We've always had a voting system on the next color of the Hero Pack or, you know, what sizes do you want to see? But now we have people who are truly invested in it. And so they can see not only what they want, but the commerciality of what we're bringing in next. And they have to think about that too, because it affects them. So it's an exciting thing.
So when you refer to customers, you're talking your general, you know, small businesses, or you're talking like bigger kind of brands, like in the retail, like wholesale space?
We have both. We have our major amount of customers is in the small to medium size space. And then we also have larger businesses who are on board. And what they do is they purchase custom mailers from us in much higher quantities than just normal Hero Packs. So a small business might, for example, buy 25 Hero Packs, you know, a week or a month, whereas these businesses, they will, you know, buy 100,000.
And then you're working with quite a few major brands as well that a lot of people know. Can you list a few of those?
Yeah, so we've got Q and Veronica Main. We've got Beginning Boutique. We've got Zane Robe, Rip Curl. But in America, which is so exciting, you know, we've got Boom by Cindy Joseph. And it's not, people wouldn't know it, but the owner of Boom by Cindy Joseph is Ezra Firestone, and he is an absolute gun when it comes to online marketing. So when I saw his business name come up as someone who was interested in Hero Packs, I got so excited. We also have Studs in America, which is a huge jewelry brand there. So we're looking to expand in the US, and, you know, having these two major clients there is such a great thing for us.
I think having major brands is great for all businesses to aspire to, because if big business can do it, smaller businesses definitely can. Smaller businesses generally are a lot more agile and adaptable, so they can make decisions much quicker than big businesses. So these bigger businesses are leading the way, which is really exciting.
Yeah.
And like you said, having these partners which are high profile and have a good influence through their marketing, you know, they're going to give a voice to Hero Packaging from a different light as well.
I would say actually that small to medium sized businesses are leading the way. They okay. are the first ones who will always do something sustainable. If we say, hey, try this idea, or hey, we've got a new product, immediately they will give it a go. Whereas big businesses, they're just a lot of bureaucracy still.
Oh, absolutely.
And so they're really slow to move. And while some of them may want to, it becomes a reference group decision for them. So it has to go through multiple people in order to make a change. Whereas small to medium sized businesses, and I love them because, and I talk to them every day, like I just genuinely love small business. They just make the change constantly, and they're trying so hard, and they're okay with failing. Big businesses are not okay with failing. There's so many people that are affected if they don't do the right thing, and so they take a long time to get across the line.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess it's good to have a mix of both.
Yeah, exactly.
I know we spoke a little bit earlier just about the small business. So I'm just wondering, do you think packaging is an easy thing for them to bring in?
So I think that when businesses are starting now, they're all thinking about sustainability first. It's not even should we do it, it's just who do we go with, or what should we do in terms of which brands should we use. I think packaging is a really easy one, if I'm honest with you. There are other things that are much more complicated. I actually think that when you're starting a business is not that hard. I think we can all try and figure out the website situation. Shopify, for example, for us, it makes it so easy to just start something. You can use apps and plugins and do all that stuff and buy your packaging and have the product ready. I think that part of it is actually quite easy to do, relatively. What is really difficult is to make more sales and make more orders and managing cash flow as your orders grow, and then figuring out, is my margin still enough when I'm paying for ads and the packaging? And there's so much to think about as you grow. But I think starting out, if you start with the right foundation, so you get the right website platform, you get the right packaging, you get the right, you know, things in place where you have a great foundation to sell something, that's a really good place to start. When you start growing, then you've got all these other issues.
I don't think growing makes it any easier. You've just got different challenges.
Yeah.
And I totally agree with you. Like just with the SaaS software like Shopify, you've just got a much easier and more efficient way to get online. And I think a lot of consumers really align with the values of brands as well. So the fact that they're taking a more sustainable mindset from the beginning, you're probably going to get a much more engaged audience and more repeat buyers through your online store.
I think that people don't, or consumers don't buy from a brand just because they're sustainable. There are some consumers who do, but the majority of them don't. But it's a great bonus to have. And it's a great bonus when they're willing to do an unboxing experience and know that it's no plastic there. Because as we know, we're in the land of unboxing experiences right now. Content creation is all about that. And actually plastic is really bad, and everyone knows that too. So if you put those two together, it's a really great environment where you have great packaging, which is, there's no plastic involved, and also you can do your unboxing, and then that promotes the word of mouth as well.
And because your products, they come in a range of different colours and sizes, so they're quite playful, and there is the opportunity to personalise as well. But I think through having quality packaging that's personalised and minimal makes a much better customer experience regardless.
Absolutely.
Because you don't want to receive lots of bubble wrap and things that then causes stress, because you've got to then get rid of it. And you have that guilt at the time. You're like, oh, I've got these four different things just for this one itty bitty little thing that I've received. Like,
absolutely.
I'm not going to buy again. Like, that's what happens in my subconscious anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people go through that. And we've all experienced that where you buy, bought a little book or something and it comes in this massive box with bubble wrap. And you think, like, what? Now it's up to me to dispose of this and I feel really bad.
Yeah, absolutely. So we want the business, but we also want the consumer to feel good about that purchase.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. To return back to the process around the equity raise, so you wanted to grow the business, but you got to a point that just you and Vic couldn't go beyond because of a certain amount of profitability and the volume that you needed to actually purchase through your manufacturing to actually sell at a certain growth level. How did you know just how much funding you actually wanted to source at the time?
We didn't know. What we actually did was we did things in steps. So we knew we needed some money. We had put together a budget with our CFO of, okay, this is what we think we need. And then she was the one to tell us that you're always going to need a little bit more than what you estimate because things are going to come up and you're going to need more money. What we did was we got the business valued by a third party valuer, and we said, okay, well, this is the amount that we want to raise, and I think what we need to do is have a percentage of what we're willing to give away of the business. And I think our maximum was 10%, and that was a little bit more than what we thought we needed in terms of a budget, so it worked out perfectly. And so we started with 500,000. We thought, okay, we could raise 500,000 and we'll put the max at 1.5 million. And that was the 10% of the business valuation. And we're willing to give away that 10%. And so that's kind of how we figured out how much we needed. And the 1.5 is an awesome amount for a small business because we're able to take that and use it for growth marketing, not just inventory.
Absolutely. Okay. So it's a combination of getting the product, but then also having the tools to sell the product.
Yes.
And is part of that aligning with the strategy to take the business to the US as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's, three sort of growth drivers or growth channels for us. One is the US market, which is massive, which means that, yes, the opportunity is big, but you need to cut through the noise there. And as a small business from Australia, how do we do that? And we do that through paid customer acquisition, and that's what we need to focus on. The second thing I would say is to get more custom clients, and so we need to hire sales staff. To this day, we don't have anyone in sales. They've all come to us. So we want to hire more sales staff here, and then we want to hire a sales member in the US as well. And then the third thing is constantly keeping our current customers happy. You know, we've got these 40,000 customers who they consistently buy from us, and we cannot let them down. So that inventory management is really important for us. And, you know, when we talk about loyalty, you can use any app that you want, you know, with Shopify and things like that. But actually what makes people loyal is just a consistent service of good and high quality. And so that's what we're focused on.
Businesses like to work with businesses that make life easy. So the fact that you're consistent and there's no questions or headaches, they want to continue that relationship. So that it's disruptive to make changes.
Yeah, correct.
From a US level, how are they from a consumerism perspective when it comes to sustainable packaging? Is it common over there? Are they big polluters? What does it look like?
They are big polluters, but then relatively Australia is a bigger polluter. So, but in terms of actually being sustainably focused, Australia is number one. Australia and New Zealand are absolutely number one when it comes to comparing to the US and even Canadian markets. So we are up there in terms of our knowledge about sustainability. And the US, a lot of the states are actually banning single-use plastic. They're doing what we're doing, but consumers are not as involved from what I can see and from my research as the Australian market.
Oh, that's really interesting. So yeah. It's the consumers that are actually saying, hey, this is not acceptable anymore, we need change.
Yeah, and there's actually no go-to sustainable packaging company in the States. So it presents an incredible opportunity. But what that means is we're trying to fill a gap in the market there, but do consumers want it? And if they want it, great, we can be there. But what if they don't want it? So it is a big risk for us as well.
But I think any business that is going international, it's all about kind of creating a local environment with a local hero. So the fact that you're hiring a US-based sales expert, like they know the territory. So, I mean, that's a great platform for you to actually launch on.
Yes, I hope so.
Yeah. So when do you start things in the US?
Now. Ooh. So, yeah, we're getting job ads out now. We're hiring a lot of people in Australia and the US. We also want to hire someone in Canada. And that's all happening right at this minute. And it's something that I'm really focused on because I would love to see our brand awareness grow in the States.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I think the equity raise has been a really great opportunity for you to learn about the business, learn about what your goals are and your strengths, but also working out what you need and bringing the right partners.
Absolutely.
So obviously, like through the equity raise, like it didn't go out to public at the beginning. So you had a lot of expressions of interest come through. So through that process, how did you make a decision on who you were actually going to invite to invest into the company?
We didn't really invite anyone to invest in the company. It was just we opened it up to our EO, so our expressions of interest. And what they do is they make the decisions for themselves. After we open it up, it's not about invites. It really is about who wants to come in. And we had hit a certain amount, and we had worked with a company or a platform called Equitize, and they're really good at telling us when to do certain things. And they said, okay, it's now time to open it up to the public if you're comfortable doing so. And we did that and we were happy with that. But had we not, we probably still would have hit the amount. But I thought it was a really great way to, one, get as many people interested as possible investing in the company. But also, you know, doing something like this, I wouldn't say it raises your profile, but it really gets more eyeballs on your brand, which is also a really great thing for us. So yes, we want the investment, but it's also nice for other people who had never heard about us before to then know, okay, there's a company called Hero Packaging and we're doing great things in the packaging space.
No, that's wonderful. And I think it's not just about raising the financials, it's the profile, like you said. And the reality is the publicity that Equitize got for you, people are talking about your brand. And the more people talk about your brand, the more people will make better decisions and that will refer your product on.
We always think about it in terms of brand consideration. So are we in people's consideration sets? And people might not be ready to purchase packaging, but when they are, will they think of Hero Packaging? And that is my goal. Brand awareness is one thing, but then it doesn't matter to me as much as when people realize that there's a problem for them in their business and they need packaging, are we considered?
My role as an e-commerce specialist is I'm a consultant and I work with brands and I help the founders of small businesses get their products online. So for me, it's really helpful to know about brands like Hero Packaging because I'm influencing them in different parts of their business get online. So for me to be able to refer quality product that's sustainable is magic because this way I know that I'm helping them to sell more product. They're a bit more mindful from an environmental perspective and they're trying to do good as well.
And that's awesome. And I think that comes down to relationship building too. So it's not just saying like, hey, China, like we've got a great product, like recommend us to your, you know, your customers and your clients. But it is just now that we've met and we have a relationship and you know, between us there is trust. And it's just such an important thing when you're having a business or growing a business to meet people that you trust and build. I don't like to use a network, but just relationships. I think it's so important now.
Networking to me is more about building communications. It's a community. So you need to have a trusted group of people that you can open up a conversation, you can share resources with and referrals, etc. Because any referral is a reflection on yourself.
Yes.
And for me to refer my clients onto a business, I want to make sure they've got integrity, that it's quality, it's going to deliver what they need. And from a packaging perspective, is it durable? Is it going to protect their product? Is it going to get from A to B? Is it mindfully made? So, you know, Hero Packaging address all that criteria, which is great.
Awesome.
Just to return back to the equity raise, do you have any advice for small businesses or actually any business that's actually looking at sourcing equity for their brand?
I do. I actually have a lot and I've learned so much in this process. I would say that, you know, the first part of the equity raise, and this is kind of how it works, which I didn't know going into it. First part is they say to open it up to your network and to see if anyone in your network is willing to invest. Because if you can have that, then when it opens it up to the expressions of interest, it already looks like, oh, hey, there are 200,000 has already been invested. So there must be a reliable brand. We didn't know that, and we don't have a network. We, in this country, it's just me and my mum and my dad and Vic's parents and his brother. So we said to mum and dad, okay, well, you invest $1,000 and Vic's parents, you invest $1,000. And so, and you know, his brother invested $5,000 because it was just amazing of him to do so. But that's what we started with. And we realized, oh my God, you know, that network of side of things, we don't have that. And so we really need to rely on our customers. So I would say the first thing is, do you have a network? Do you have people who are really invested already in your business mentally and so that they would actually put their money there too? That's a great thing to start with. Another thing I would say is making sure that you are very, very, you know what your USPs are, your unique selling propositions. You know what makes you stand out in terms of your competitors? Because when we spoke to a lot of VCs who are putting in money into the equity raise and a lot of private equity, their first question was, let's talk about your competition and like what makes you different. That was the one question that came up every time. And so I would say you need to know exactly what makes you different and unique, your business. Is there something about your business that can take it to the next level? So can anyone come in with a bit of money and do what you do? Because if they can, you need to figure out how you're going to be different. So I'd say they're my two main points. If you are raising funds, you need to know your business inside and out, know your data, know your numbers, know each product margin, know the sales that it brings in, know your forecasts, because you will get put on the spot when you're talking to people. And in this country, there are two main platforms that you can raise crowdfunding through and equity crowdfunding. One of them is Equitize, which we use. And we chose them specifically because they literally held our hand through the entire process. They're the ones who helped us to reach out to those VCs. They're the ones who made contacts and brought them to us. And so we needed that because we don't have that network to start with.
So what's a VC?
A venture capitalist, or a private equity. Yeah. They're just firms that basically have a lot of money to spend and they want to invest it in something. And so we don't know those people, but Equitize, they brought those people to us to have those meetings.
Because from a VC perspective, they would be registered through a company like Equitize, yes, just to see the opportunities that are going.
Okay. They do. They look for those, but also a lot of the time they're busy and so they don't read the Equitize newsletter. So what Equitize does is they go out and they actually get them for you and they set up the meeting for you, which was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. No advisors. We had absolutely no idea. It's kind of nice sometimes to be a bit naive going into something. You don't know what the bad stuff is. So you go into it, you go all in. And we just worked with them. And that's why we chose them, just because they're very much like they told us exactly what we needed to do on what day. When we were creating our investor deck, they were there at 11 p.m. at night. I could see them editing it as well as we were. And I just had a great experience with them.
So from start to finish, so from the moment you and Vic decided, hey, we need to actually raise some cash flow here, to actually getting on the platform and then closing the equity raise, what did that time frame look like?
From deciding until closing, it was about 5 months.
5 months. So that's relatively quick.
It is actually. It's really, really quick. We had an email from someone from Equitize to say, hey, have you ever thought about it? We had not. And so we kind of explored the path. It seemed really good for us. And then we just moved really quickly.
So in that time, was that when you looked at your financials and what you wanted to actually raise? Or was that before that?
No, we hired a CFO. And she did a lot of budgeting and forecasting for us. Then we, as part of the entire process, we got our business valued after we decided to do it. Mm-hmm. And then, because that's an expensive process within itself. And then once we did that, then we decided how much we wanted and then we moved forward.
Yeah, fantastic. What kind of accountability do you now have with these shareholders that own 10% of your company?
Well, one is that we need to make sure that what we say we're going to do, we do. And I get a little bit teary, so I'm going to not do that right now. But there are people who have put in a lot of money and trusted us. And these are not rich people. These are just normal, everyday people. And so, you know, someone said to me, I don't have the funds yet, but I'd like to invest $250. I mean, can you wait for me like for a few weeks? So, I mean, that is really, really nice to hear. But we have to make sure that we are doing what we say, because that's their money. So, yeah. And I think financially our goal is to just hit what we say we're going to do, but also give them quarterly updates. That's the bare minimum. And we need to just make sure that if we say, look, we're going to bring in 5 new products and it's going to have a margin of this, which is what we said in the investor deck, that is what we do. We have hired the people that we said we're going to hire and we always give them updates. Quarterly financial updates is the bare minimum, but monthly I'm always sending a newsletter to say, hey, this is what we're doing. We actually said we were going to hit this. We didn't hit it, but we are very close to it. And being really transparent with it, that's my accountability.
I think transparency is key. And even if something is delayed or you couldn't get there, I think just having that honest conversation with your shareholders is really important. But then going back to what you were saying about, you know, you're investing, other people have invested their own personal money. Mm. Like, running a small business is really hard and it's intensely personal. And for you and Vic, it's been really personal the last 4 years because your family owned business, you've got mm-hmm. three young daughters. There's a lot on the line.
Mm.
There's a lot of commitments in place and things that you've given up over time just to build this business. And now it's taken on additional complexity by actually having these shareholders, which again are investing their own personal money.
Yeah, and I'd just like to also add to that, though, that how lucky are we that we get to do that? I mean, my parents would have loved to do that. They didn't have that opportunity, so I feel really lucky to be able to do that, and I'm going to take that investment that people put in us. I'm going to work really hard. Like, it's not really a transactional business. This business is mine. It's me. I started it. I'm going to put in everything I can to make sure that it grows for them, but for also for us, you know, for my family too. But everyone is part of this. We're all growing together, and we still get emails from customers being like, hey, I invested. Have you ever thought about bringing in X, Y, and Z? And that's cool for us because we put it into our suggestion box and we look at it all the time to see what we can do. And that's just exciting.
And when they're taking ownership of it by sharing their ideas, and you can't have every idea. So like, you've got the business up to a point, but other people are living very different lives and they see different challenges or have different ideas. So it's great to be able to have those conversations.
Totally. And they're not just our customers. They end up being, you know, the end consumer too. So they buy our packaging, but then another company that they buy from might use Hero Packs and they get sent the Hero Packs and then they go, oh, well, it was sent to me in this certain way. I reckon there's an idea here. Can you also put on the label that X, Y, and Z needs to be there? And then that brings up ideas for us, not just from businesses who buy our products, but the end user.
So part of people investing in the equity raise, you had like different tiers of investment and just the accountability. And one of those was actually getting together in person with your shareholders.
Yes.
Tell us what that's all about.
So that's exciting for us. So we're about to launch a new product, which actually I have not spoken about or anything, but it's an absolutely revolutionary new product. It's coming out and it's going to actually be an online retailer, which I'll see you there. But that product is going to be something that we offer to small, medium-sized businesses, but also to the large retailers who really need it. You know, it's specifically for fashion brands. And so that is, we're going to have an event for that. And who better to invite than our shareholders who have invested so much of their money. We're going to have an event or a lunch, and we're just going to make sure that everyone comes together and can really be excited about this thing that I think is going to be just a massive, massive, you know, packaging element in this industry.
I think people just love being part of a process. So, you know, sharing that dialogue from, you know, the idea creation to manufacturing to bring it to life, and then them to be able to celebrate in like a community forum as like your party to launch it,
yeah,
is a great way to bring them together to actually test it. And there's a sense of pride that comes with that as well.
So yeah, I think true.
A really amazing opportunity just to bring those people together.
Yeah, I'm excited.
I'd like to talk a little bit about online retailer actually. So You have been awarded as finalists for the ORIAs, which is the Online Retail Industry Awards, for the best B2B online retailer or the best business-to-business online retailer and the best small independent retailer. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So why is it important to you to actually enter awards?
Because it gives us recognition for the hard work that we're putting in, and that is the basic premise of this whole thing. We have worked so hard to be an online retailer that it makes things easy for our customers to buy our product and to use our product. We're trying to educate people. We're trying to make them buy things that they never thought about buying. We're there on their Facebook ads, on their Google ads. We direct them to our website and we try and make our website as user-friendly as possible. And that's not just me. I started the website, but we've got staff who are incredible. They are there on live chat. They are there fixing the website all the time. You know, we've put in so much hard work. Even at nighttime when all our kids are in bed, we're still working. And just to feel like we're being recognized for that is such a nice thing. And it's not just great for us, but our staff then can feel like, oh my God, they're being recognized in an industry style situation for their hard work on our website and doing things to make the customer happy. I mean, awards are, of course, it's a little bit self-fulfilling. You really want to win. But just to be a finalist of something that I never thought was possible before in my first business, now that we're a finalist, I mean, I feel so happy. And it's all thanks to the team as well. But they're incredibly excited.
That's just brilliant. I think quite often in business, you get caught up with the day-to-days and you don't realize the milestones you reach. So I think something like an award, it's like you're actually reflecting on it. And you're reflecting on it with your team. So they're like, wow, congratulations, we've actually achieved quite a lot here. And then to get the industry's recognition on top of that, I think is something to be immensely proud of.
Oh, yeah, we were so excited. Like, I was just incredibly excited when they announced it. I mean, I think they were going to announce it on one day and they were a day late. So I thought, right, well, we didn't get it. That's fine.
Oh, no.
And I was trying to hide my disappointment. I was like, everyone, it's okay. You know, next year will be better. And then when they announced it, like, I think I did jump, scream a little bit. So.
And how did they announce it?
So I saw it, this is really bad to admit, but I was just on their Instagram page on online retailer and I was just refreshing to see if they were going to make the announcement or not. I was probably the first person to see their post. That's how I saw it for the first time. And immediately I liked it. I shared it. I screenshotted it, sent it to mom and dad first. That was the first thing I did. And then I sent it to the team and then we got an email as well.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
So would you have any tips for other businesses who are looking at entering awards?
Yeah, it depends what the award is, obviously. But something like online retailer, it's all about e-commerce. It's all about the user experience within your website. And it's about how can people get to where they want to go very easily and navigationally. Is your website easy to use? Can they find what they're looking for? And are they happy when they get there? Are their questions answered? So for us, that was the biggest thing. It's just a really easy process to buy something from us. My other piece of advice is always to look at the winners of the previous, previous years. So you need to examine and analyze exactly what they did to get the award. And if you truly think that you are in the running to have that award, always have a look at them for inspiration and then do something completely out of the box. Do something different. Make it memorable. And so that award is not just copying what other people have done, but you're making it your own.
That's really good advice. So what did you do which was different and memorable?
I love the concept of being a packaging company that is does not look like a packaging company. I like the thought of looking like a B2C retailer. I have a lot of social media elements on the website that no one else has. If you look at our competitors or if you look at other packaging companies or B2B, anyone in B2B space, it's very much a B2B website. When you come to ours, it looks bright and fun and engaging. It's got social media stories at the top. It's got a video of me talking about products. There's just so much going on. It makes you feel like the website is alive and not a static website. And that's what I wanted. Yeah.
And you make it really clear from the beginning that, you know, you and Vic actually run this business and you're passionate about making change in the packaging space.
Yeah, and that's a big thing for us. I wanted to humanize the brand a lot. I think that you can fall into that trap of hiding behind your product, and that's fine to do. A lot of people can do that and that's great. For me, I want to humanize it and say that if you're buying packaging from Hero Packaging, you're buying it from Anita. That's a really big thing because if you're not unhappy with it, email me directly and let me know.
And you actually do have your email address that page. Yeah. One of the first things I do when I do a website audit for businesses on their e-commerce stores is actually go to the About Us page. Like to me, that is probably one of the most valuable pages on any website.
Yeah.
And too often people do not have a story about the founders or the people behind the brand.
Mm-hmm.
Now you guys put it up front, the story about how you came to be Hero Packaging, the problem, as well as like your family and your objectives. And I just think that's a really nice way for people to connect with you and to engage with your content as well.
Yeah, and that's not a marketing strategy. That's who I am. I actually love... I'm very transparent, very open. I love talking about money. I love talking about kids. I love talking about dirty nappies. I can talk about anything. Nothing is off the table. I think that if you are really going to establish a relationship with anyone, and especially your customers, they should know the nitty-gritties and they should know a little bit about you because it's all about that trust.
And I think it's about humanizing because people want to engage with other people and, you know, other businesses run by people, especially when you're in the small business space, because it's all about that personal connection.
Well, a lot of small business owners that I speak to, they don't want to show their face too much because they think, oh, people are going to think I'm smaller than what I actually am. And I think like, so what? So what if they think that? What if they think you're a small business? You are a small business.
So I wanted to talk a bit about motherhood with you. So, you know, you're just talking before about, you know, you're happy to have a conversation about anything.
Yeah.
What has your experience been like the last few years? Because running a business is hard and obviously your family are very important for you.
So I had my first business and that's when I had one kid and I was pregnant with the other one. And so at that time, I was the sole carer for the two kids and I was trying to do a little business in my home office. And so it was okay. It was, the sales were slowly coming in. I could manage during nap times and things like that. When Hero Packaging started and immediately the demand was so huge, we took a huge risk by getting Vic to leave his full-time role, which was the head of e-commerce. And, you know, that's a lot of money lost, steady money. And so we took a big risk in that. Well, what happened then was that we needed to make it work. And we then decided between the two of us that if we do have another kid, that he would be the primary caregiver of that kid and I would be able to run the business. And for me, it's a really important thing because when I'm happy, the kids are super happy. Vic's super happy. The family is really happy. And that works with anyone in the family. If they're happy, everyone's happy. And so my thing was, I've done it with the two kids. If we're going to have a third, which we really wanted to, and we can go into that later because I'm an only child, I wanted a bigger family. But if we're going to have another one, he needs to look after that kid and I need to be able to run the business the way that I want to run it. So luckily the business has grown and it did work out. And so now that my youngest one is 1.5, he still does a lot of the parenting and I do too, but when it comes to, you know, the pickups and drop-offs, a lot of the time it's Vic doing it. And it's only because of that that I feel like I can truly invest a lot of my time in the business. And that's it comes with pros and cons, but one thing that we do all the time is that we work really hard. We do all the drop-offs. We work really hard and at 3 o'clock we are both there to pick up the kids and we are both there to feed them and to play with them until they go to sleep and then we will work until midnight or 1 a.m. On the business. And that's okay to do that because we sit next to each other and we can have a chat and we can work on the business and then we'll always end the day with like a TV show or something just to relax us. But it works for us and it's something, but I have to say this, that it starts with a lot of privilege too, to be able to do that, because I know when we first started Hero Packaging, I knew that if, say, for example, things didn't work out, I have my mum and dad in the same country and they can help out. So I just want to say that because not everyone has the same privilege. And so we were able to do that and we were able to stand on a platform and then work from there.
It's good to kind of recognise that privilege, and I think, you know, I've been very fortunate to have both Vic support to kind of take, you know, to quit his job and then play that full-time parent role as well as have your parents in the country.
Yeah.
But it's nice that the two of you have actually prioritised, you know, those pick-up times and play and like dinner time with the kids, because obviously they're only going to be young for so long.
Mm.
How old are they?
One is 7, one is 6, and one is 1.5.
Yeah, so they're at quite a fun age where they want to be quite engaging with you. That they love spending time with their family, and you know, it's a very unique position for you to be in at the moment.
Yeah, I love it. I just love the fact that I am a business owner. I don't need to answer to anyone if I want to go and attend the athletics carnival or if I want to go and, you know, do the reading groups or something. I don't have to answer to anybody. I can go and do that, and I can be a full-time parent and a full-time business owner, and I can make it work in some kind of way. If that means I just have to do most of my work from 8 p.m. to 1 a.m., I'm happy to do that.
Yeah, wow. And how are you sleeping at that time? Like, you feel like you've rested?
To be honest, I think I ebb and I flow with my sleeping. Most of the time, you know, once we turn off the TV, I go straight to bed and I'm out. And then in the mornings, we do the 8 o'clock wake up. The kids are at an age, the older kids, who they can dress themselves. They can be ready and they can give themselves breakfast if we're not up, you know, if we're still getting ready. So it does make life easier. It was very hard at the beginning, I'll be honest. Smaller. Yeah. When they're little, it is a very difficult thing. But what I can say to people who have young kids is that there is a light, and I'm only just starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel where they're starting to do their own thing. You know, they can go downstairs, they can give the dog some food, they can make their own breakfast, they can be fully ready by the time we come down and we're ready. So it's a very nice process. And also we have a quite a large age gap with the third one, and so the older two can look after her too.
That's fantastic. And I think by giving them trust, you know, they're going to be very confident individuals as they grow up as well. So you are teaching them some good quality life lessons through giving them that opportunity to be independent.
Yeah, absolutely. I would hope so.
Yeah, that's good. So I mean, I think a lot of women hesitate to actually start a family and to run their career or to start a business. Have you got any advice for those women?
You need to really think about what makes you happy. If you truly want to have kids, and you need to be able to make it work. So I think if you want to have a career and you don't want to have kids, then do that. But don't listen to everybody else. Mm. Don't think that your mum wants you to do this and so you've got to do it that way, or your friends are doing it in a certain way and you've got to do it. If I did that, I'd be working at Westpac, to be honest with you, with one child. So I wouldn't be happy. I try to do things in my own way. And, you know, that's a big thing for me to do as this Indian girl, because it was not meant to be that way. It was meant to be you have one kid, you're in a big corporate firm, you become a partner there, and that's where you stay. You have one career path and you do that. The fact that I changed multiple times to find my happiness, I guess you would say, it was a very hard thing for my family to digest. But now that I'm here and they can see just how happy I am, that is the most success I think I could find.
So proud of you, I reckon.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's taken a long time because of that.
The traditional mindset.
Yeah, it's traditional, and they're actually pretty good like that. They do understand new concepts, and they are really great, but at the end of the day, they're raised in a way where you have one career path, and that's what you do because that's what brings success. And when you come here with no money, you've got to really work in one career path because that's going to bring you money in order to have a house. So that was their thinking, and now I kind of came in like a tornado, and then I flipped things around, but luckily it worked out, and they're really happy.
But again, going back to the conversation around privilege, like we are in an era where there's so much innovation, opportunity to do what you want, whether or not you want to found a business or you're a female entrepreneur or you want to have a family and a career. Like, you know, society's changing, the environment's changing. All conditions are changing. It's just such an exciting time for life and business.
It really is, yes. But, you know, when we do talk about privilege, we also have to realize that everyone's situation is so different. Not everyone has the capability or the resources to start a business. And even with your career, some people have to be in an unhappy career because their family situation isn't great. So we have to just take that into account.
Absolutely.
But if you do have the option, or if you do have, you know, the luxury of being able to say, hey, I'm going to try something that makes me happy, you should do it.
I always like to tell people, if you're passionate about it, just persist. Be patient and persist. You will succeed at it, and just follow that path.
Yeah, I think when it comes to business, though, you also, I would add on one more thing, which is be passionate, but also make sure there's demand. That's it.
That's very good advice.
Make sure you follow your dreams and you be passionate, but you make sure that whatever you're selling, there is demand for it. Otherwise, it's just not going to succeed.
And because you are putting a lot of energy into that, so you need the demand and you need the passion to drive it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, very good advice. Just want to talk briefly just around female entrepreneurship and what that means to you.
Female entrepreneurship to me means the same as male entrepreneurship, but I think that's exactly your point, in that I see myself as an equal to anyone who starts a business. It could be male or female, but that's not always the case. When I was younger, it was never like that. It was always, I remember when I started my business and I had some tradies come home and they saw me working in the business and they're like, oh, that's a nice hobby, or that's a cute hobby, or some words like that.
Perception.
Now, no one dare say that to me. I think I'm so outspoken in the fact that whatever you start as a male, I'll start as a female. Like, there is no difference between us. And female entrepreneurship, the only difference here, which this is a personal opinion, is I think we have a lot of guilt all the bloody time. We feel like we need to apologize. We feel guilty all the time. And if I have to not see my kids because I'm off to an event or a podcast or anything, I feel really guilty. Whereas a lot of male counterparts, this is a generalization, but a lot of them don't feel that guilt, and we have this innate guilt and we are very empathetic. And so that's the one thing I would say, is that we can use that, but it doesn't need to hinder us in terms of business.
And I think just recognizing, you know, that women and men work differently, they learn differently, and they have different expectations on themselves. I think one way of kind of getting around that is probably by having a mentor or somebody to support you through that process. Mm-hmm. Have you had any mentors?
Not formal mentors, but I would say that it's always been my mum first, and she is always the person and a female in my life who has shown me how to be with customers. So I sell an online product. She was a doctor, completely different, but everything remains the same. because she never thought of herself as a business owner who needs to make a ton of money. What she thought of was, I need enough money to survive, but my customers, when they walk out of my consulting room, need to be really happy. I want them to come back to me. If she hears that they've gone somewhere else, she was really sad. So she would like do Saturday phone calls to make sure they were okay. She would be available after hours. To this day, when she is at the age where she can retire, she is still there talking to those same patients that she had 30 years ago, and she'll talk to them at nighttime like they're her friend. She has taught me so much about business and looking at a business like it's not transactional, but it's that you're serving people. And then I also have a mentor from my teaching at Macquarie Uni, and she is someone who I never asked to be a mentor, but I did ask her, hey, I kind of like presenting. I like talking. Do you reckon I could be a tutor? And from that moment, she not only got me a tutoring job at Macquarie Uni, she's given me guest lecturing jobs. She's given me lecturing jobs. She's provided me opportunities. And we are now about to be partners of Macquarie University because she has given Hero Packaging another opportunity to be part of something massive. And so people like that in your life, is just, they're not formal mentors, but they're just there and they're supporting you. And I cherish that.
I think, depending on how you want to define a mentor, but people do come and go in your life, whether or not they're paid or just through a conversation, can help influence you or support you in a certain decision, just to have somebody to have that conversation at a certain level.
Yes.
When we're in business, we need to learn to ask for help. And I think as women, well, speaking for myself anyway, I've never liked to ask for help. Like, I've liked to be able to do it myself before I've actually told somebody or asked for that help. So I think we almost have to just define exactly what we want. So the fact that you said, hey, I want to actually have a voice and be able to lecture, that opened that opportunity up.
Yeah, and that was a really hard thing for me to do because I immediately thought she was going to say no. And I did ask the right person, but I just opened myself up. And I do find now that I'm a bit more confident within my capabilities that when I ask for things, most likely people are going to say, yeah, I can help you, or I can try at least. And people are human at the end of the day. We put this such a martyrship on like people, but actually they are human beings who want to help. I think that's innate within all of us.
And people want to help and they want to be involved.
Yeah.
So it's just learning to open up the channel so that they can help you and they can get involved. So it's like spelling out clearly, I need this, I want this, can you help create this opportunity? I think is important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's really good advice. You've got a lot of things pulling your attention. You know, you're a full-time mom, full-time business owner. You've just done an equity raise. Like, how are you like protecting your mental health and staying focused and motivated during this time?
So like I said, I switch off at certain times to be with the kids. So no matter how stressed I am, I will have to be someone's snack person, drinks person. You know, when I'm with them, I am 100% with them. And that really helps me in terms of my mental health. When I'm focused on business, I'm focused on business. But when I come home, I am with the kids 100%. There is no in between. I'm not on my phone and kind of talking to them. I'm focused on them. And that helps me because they're talking about things from school that is so simple and innocent and wonderful that it makes me forget about all the stress. And I can always come back to that stress, but I've actually had a few hours break from it, which is a really nice thing. Also, another thing that we do is, you know, Vic and I are co-founders, but we're also husband and wife, and we always go for a walk in the morning to not talk about anything business or kids. We just talk about things that we've heard in the news, or we're just being together as people. And then at the end of every day, we also watch our TV show. And that could be anything from Stranger Things to Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. There's no judgment. We can watch anything to switch off, you know, and it's nice to be able to go straight from reading something about data and marketing analytics and then go straight into Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. There's something really special in that, and being able to do that together is really nice.
That's really awesome because it's like your partner, they're your best friend at the end of the day, and you've got to hang out with them and you have to invest in that relationship. You know, it's not just a business partnership. They're not just the father of your kids. Like, this is your friend, you know, they're your best friends. You have to honour that and actually give it the time it deserves.
Yeah, and you have to also sit back and think, I don't want to just be a co-owner of a business together. I don't want to just be a parent with you. We are actually husband and wife. How can we be husband and wife? And that's a really key thing that we've been talking about lately.
Well, awesome. I just wanted to finish up on your favorite piece of technology. Is there something that you live with and you love at the moment that you'd like to share with us?
There are so many. The favorite piece of technology, I love an app called Shift. It's a desktop app, and it basically integrates all of your email platforms, your other apps, your Shopify, anything that you have. It can be within one window, and it's just different tabs on in that one window. And for me, it's just very convenient to be able to go to Google Drive in a tab, and then you can go to your Gmail in another tab, and then that's fantastic. I would say on another side of things, if I can just have one more, is that something that I have been using every day, and it's not really an app, but it is a social media platform, which is TikTok, which I think has absolutely exponentially grown my profile as a marketer and as a business owner, and also for Hero Packaging, but also for, you know, my book. And it's just in the last year has really, really helped me.
Be able to use those tools to your advantage and have some fun with it is really powerful. And yep, because you have got that marketing background, it does actually help for your content creation.
Yeah.
Any tips for TikTok?
Yeah, create consistently.
Yeah.
And it, quantity is greater than quality. That's what I would say. I would say, you know, if you do more often than not, it doesn't matter if it's a 7-second quick video of you walking. That is going to be, it's going to add to the consistency. It's going to get the reach, because only 5% of your videos go viral. And if you're creating only 5 pieces of content, nothing's going to go viral. If you're creating 100 pieces of content, something will go viral. Yeah.
That's a good lesson to learn. Because I think a lot of people probably give up in that early stages. They're like, you know, I've posted 5-10 times. Nobody's seen it. Nothing's happening. It's not worth my energy.
You need to wait 6 months. And you'll get zero views until then. And then you'll start to see a few hundred views, a few thousand views. And within a year, I guarantee, if you are posting consistently, you're going to get hundreds of thousands of views.
And how frequently are you posting?
Right now, not very often. I feel like I'm losing time. But when I first started, and for the first year, it was 3 to 4 times a day consistently. Oh,
3 to 4 times a day.
A day. And now it's at 300,000 followers. And they're growing even though I'm not posting consistently. It does work.
And just recently, Shopify released a new app through the App Store called Planet Carbon Neutral Shipping. And so it offers carbon neutral shipping and showcases your commitment as a business.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's cool, hey?
Yeah, I love that. I love what Shopify is doing. I think they're coming out with things that they listen to people who use Shopify, and they actually make changes all the time based on what is in demand.
Cool. One thing that we've spoken about before is that you want to be recognized as being good at business.
Yeah.
What does that mean to you?
It means that this is what I'm passionate about, and I want people to know that I look at business like it is a lifestyle, and I want to be known as someone who can have the kids and have a business and grow a business and grow a brand and really know what they're talking about. I don't want to just be, she's the CEO of Hero Packaging. No, she also really knows her stuff. I read about it every day. I'm reading newsletters about it. I'm watching YouTube videos about business and entrepreneurship and ads and the nitty gritty side of data. You know, all of that stuff is something that I'm so passionate about. And so if people were to look at me and say, hey, she actually knows what she's talking about with business, it just means that I'm validated.
Just lastly, so Anita and Vic will be at Online Retailer, and they're going to have their own expo stand.
Yes, we are. We're going to have a booth there. It's the first time we're doing it. I've always been to Online Retailer. I've been for years. I love everything about it. So the expo itself, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but is free for everyone to attend. And then there's also some speaking and stuff which you have to pay to attend. But we'll have a booth at the expo, and it's essentially just talking to other e-commerce stores about the packaging that we do and switching from anything that they use, which is plastic, into something a little bit more sustainable.
So if anyone has a question, they can come up to your stand and learn a bit more.
Oh, absolutely.
And
yes,
also a touch point so they can actually feel your packaging and have the experience firsthand.
Yeah, totally. And I love a good chat too about anything. So I would love it if people could come and say hi.
And so anyone who wants to actually learn a bit more about Anita or Hero Packaging or the other things that you're involved in, what's the best platforms for people to find you?
Well, you can always LinkedIn me. That's the first thing. And you can always email me at anita@heropackaging.com.au. But then there's also our website. There's also our social media accounts for Hero Packaging. And then I also have a social media account on TikTok for business advice and e-commerce advice. And that's Sell Anything Online.
Mm-hmm. And so you've also got a book as well.
I do, yeah.
Oh, congratulations. How long's that been in publication?
Just 1 year.
Yep.
And I sold it. I've sold all of the copies. I think it's about 3,500 copies now through TikTok.
Oh, how amazing. So yeah. It is a platform that works.
It does. It really does.
Well, thanks so much for joining me today, Anita. It's been really interesting to learn about your business. And I just think what you're doing for the retail space is really important. And you're producing something that's actually going to add value from a business perspective, but also going to help us reduce our waste and improve this planet that we're living in. So thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for having me. I've loved it.
A pleasure.
Thanks for listening to our show today. Please share this with women you know who would benefit in hearing our stories and want the knowledge, inspiration, and connection to build a business that they love online. If you love what you've heard, please rate this podcast with a 5 or leave a message in the comments below. Just like giving a review on a retailer's website, your feedback gives us credibility and helps more women discover us.